You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in to another edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast, where we, of course, talk about the Indiana Pacers. As always, I'm one of the hosts of this show, Tony East, covering the Indiana Pacers for Forbes and the West Indianapolis Community News. On the other line, as always, Adam Friedman, my co-host. Adam, how are you?
Pretty good. Recording's kind of late on a Sunday evening. We'll, of course, have a football 5 minutes, but it wasn't a great day for the fellow Colts fan over here. Good day for your Vikings, though. But yeah, overall, I did pretty well.
Very good day for my Vikings. Although, yeah. I got to be honest, I did not watch a single snap of that game.
Well, to be honest, once the basketball starts, we'll stop talking about football. But like right now, there's not a lot to like sports to consume, at least as a – I mean, I'm not really a baseball fan. So, yeah, there's a lot of sports to consume.
Yes. Fever wrapped up their season today. I got to go watch some history as Kelsey Mitchell set the WNBA three-point record, 9 threes. And she had the Fever scoring record with 38. And their rookie, Tierra McGowan, set their season rebound record. It was quite the historic last game for the Fever. So if you'll recall, today we thought we were going to be able to talk about the SI Top 100, but we were wrong. It actually comes out the Monday after Labor Day, which makes a lot of sense. We're just dumb.
We screwed that one up. We were like, is it come out the first Monday of the month? But wait, oh yeah, it's the next Monday.
Yeah, so we thought we were going to be able to talk about that, but that we can talk about next week. But we actually are going to use it still as a platform for today because – we're going to try to predict where each Pacer is going to end up, which should be fun. For example, last year, Malcolm Brogdon was not ranked. He will certainly be ranked this year. Miles Turner, I believe, ended up at like about 50. Does that
67,
right?
Actually.
67?
Yes. Ugh.
What do I know? That seems wrong. Is that really what he – wow. He was really 67.
Tony, I did some pre-show prep. I know you'll be shocked, but
Sabonis last year was 79.
Yes.
Will certainly be higher. And Oladipo was something like 15, I believe.
20. He was 20. So on the ESPN list, Oladipo was 15, Brogdon was 90, Sabonis was 89, and Turner was 48.
That's the difference. I like Daryl's
better. That's why you're pulling out some different numbers because they were actually quite different lists from last year with the Pacers.
I only have the SI list up in front of me.
Well, the SI only had three Pacers on it, but the ESPN, I think, had four or five. I think it had Collison and had
one of them had Tyreek at like player 100, too.
So that was ESPN then. So they had five Pacers.
So, yeah, let's see what these lists really tell us because remember last time around this time, people thought Tyreek Evans was a top 100 NBA player.
Yes, and now he is no longer in the league. Is he playing in Europe yet? Did he sign with the team?
Well, did you see that this is not related to what we're about to talk about, but China is apparently making this rule where, like, if you're banned from the NBA, you're also banned from the China League, so he couldn't play that.
Well, that'd be known, too. Also, this last list had, I believe, Harden at 4 and Giannis at 6, and those are probably the best two players last year.
That's 1-2 now, yeah.
And I think Kawhi didn't crack the top 10 because there were injury concerns. Yeah, cool. Kawhi, I think, on this list is ranked 12. So the three players last year aren't on this list.
We need to set rules for predicting this because since they're so different, like, are we predicting where SI is going to have the player?
Yes, that's what we're doing. I just simply pulled the ESPN because it's a nice kind of like second way to see where they're ranked, I guess.
Yeah. So who do you want to start with, Turner?
Let's do players that are on the Pacers last year we think will be ranked.
Okay, so Miles, like we already established, I was wrong, was 67, and I remember last summer, this was funny. This is funny in retrospect. He's one spot ahead of Boogie. Remember, Boogie was 68, and I was like, I know, when Boogie's healthy, he'll be better, and now I do not think that. SI kicked my butt with that one.
Was Boogie even better when he's healthy than Turner? I don't think so.
I don't even know about that. So just like scrolling up through guys, he's clearly better than ahead of him. At 63, they had Valanciunas. He'll be ahead of that. J.J. Redick, he'll jump that. Mirotic is out of the league. Valanciunas
as well.
Yeah. Jeff Teague, he'll probably jump. You know, there's a lot of guys who still were good, as they'll probably still be in the top 100 even. But Turner just improved on defense enough last year that I think he will move up on this list for sure.
So right? I have a good one for you. So Booker was ranked 50th, right? Booker's the
Devin
same draft.
Booker,
yes, Devin Booker. He's the same draft class as Turner, I believe. I believe he went like 14 and Turner went 11 of that year, yep. Maybe 13, 11, something like that. Do you think he should be ranked higher than Devin Booker?
No, I do not.
How much higher would Booker be than Turner?
You know, here's an interesting thing to me is I think Booker's a lot better than they have him. Like, he's one spot behind Eric Gordon. Don't get me wrong. I love Eric Gordon. IU boy still has the IU jersey on in his Twitter picture. But Booker's just better than him. Like,
but who's a more valuable player last year, I guess? Probably Turner, right? In terms of just...
It's hard to say because Booker was hurt, but probably over the course of the season, Turner. It's like 57's Jaylen Brown. Like, that's, he's really even with Turner in terms of impact right now.
So I will tell you, win shares last year, I'm pulling it up. I believe Turner had him beat by a good margin.
Like Dragic, he'll jump Dragic. I like the draft class idea, though. Was Gary Harris one draft class before them?
That sounds right.
Gary Harris was 44. He'll probably be ahead of Gary Harris, right?
Yeah, so Devin Booker had a win share 3.5. And Turner had a 6.3 win share. Now, granted, Turner played for a much better team. But
yeah, it's cumulative, too, so it's a little hard.
Yeah, but Booker ended up playing 64 games. Oh. I mean, Turner played 70-something, right? Maybe retaining like 75. So maybe not even that.
I could keep going on and naming guys. I think Turner will jump. Now, obviously, some of the guys will jump him. Luka, Zion, whoever the hell else improved from last year. But I can see him moving up 10, 15 spots and being, I'll go 53.
I think I would go on the, I mean, I'd be surprised if he's not top 50. I think I should be right around that 45, 50 range seems right to me. If he's a little higher, it's because they're really valuing his defense more than we do, I guess. And the question is too, I mean.
So I think actually I'm going to say that you're probably right, because looking back through this, like SI has Otto Porter really high and Marcus Saul really high. Like, they seem to value impact over talent a little bit more than other sites do. So I think they might actually value Sabonis and Turner higher because of that.
Yeah, I mean, like, for example, so Marcus Saul's at 40. Would you would probably put him over Gasol that next season, right?
We're very close. They will probably be very close to each other.
But in terms of, I guess, in terms of impact next season, I guess you call pretty close. I think Turner, though, because younger.
That's true. They are trying to predict for next season. So, yeah, Turner's probably ahead of Gasol.
Right, because they don't necessarily – because. Also, I wonder what they do with Kevin Durant. Would they just leave him off of it and say he's not going to play, so we're just going to leave him off the list kind of thing? So, because I believe their lists are based on next year only.
It says top 100 players of 2019.
Yeah.
So, like, Kevin Love was 31 last year. Like, that's the level of player it takes to get to 31 as, like, a fringe all-star. Turner's, a tick below that probably as a player. So, yeah, you're probably right. Like, low 40s.
Yeah. Honestly, if I had a guess, I think he'd be, like, 45. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, and I'm going to bury a lead here. I think Sabonis is going to be right around him.
Yes, so let's do that. Let's do him next. So Sabonis was 79 on the SI and 89 on ESPN last year.
Wow. So I think ESPN, he'll jump a ton, but I think SI, he'll jump even higher because, you know, his skills he had 2 years ago, he just, like, refined them and used them more effectively last year, and his impact stats were huge, and I think SI is going to – we'll make him fly because of that. Like, they had Joe Ingles, 56. Joe Ingles is awesome. He's definitely an impact guy. But, you know, I think
– don't hit on Joe Ingles on this podcast. Remember, the Jazz fans will come after you.
Joe Ingles and Boyan being on the same team is poetic after that whole debacle. That's so
cool. Yeah.
But I think Sabonis will move from, like, 79 to the mid-40s on SI, and then ESPN maybe 89 to, like, 60 or 55. So,
see, I think the thing with Sabonis last year was they – a lot of the rankings weren't sure whether what he did in his second year was going to happen again in his third year, and it really did. He got better, too. I mean, obviously, he made a huge – like, his game completely changed, right, from year one to year two. He was, like, playing kind of a power forward stretch four with Oklahoma City. Then he started playing, like, a true center. Now he gets going back to that sort of – so that all could impact how I think he'll do next year. I agree he'll be higher. I don't know where, because I don't know if they're going to look at, like, was he playing the four, which is where he kind of struggled before, so maybe he should be, like, in the 50s, but as, like, a pure stats guy last year, he should be predicted maybe to be closer to Turner, like, right behind him, for example, because I think you can make a case both of them provide the same amount of impact to the team, just in different aspects of the game.
Absolutely. They even kind of mentioned that last year, talking about concerns over Sabonis's defense, but how good his chemistry is with Oladipo, and how the Pacers finally had him playing to his strengths at the right position.
Well, and he's just a better offensive player than Turner.
Well, what do you think? Do you think they'll take anything into factor with him playing power forward? I don't think so.
I don't think so, but I do wonder. Well, I mean, if you think about it, it also means more minutes. It might actually not be – it'll be good for his actual, like, stats, per se, I think, right?
That's true. Yeah, he could end up higher than Turner. I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't think that. I think Turner has kind of established himself with his consistency for now, being basically the same player for three of the last four seasons.
Yeah.
I mean, except for that, I say that 1 year where he got hurt is kind of an anomaly to base, but everything else, he's kind of been the same exact player, just improving in terms of size and strength and whatnot. But he's been the same kind of rim protector. I think you get more credit for that. Sabonis has only done it for like 2 years and is switching back to positions that he didn't play last year. So I think he'll be below Turner, but I would be surprised if there's more than a 10 spot gap between them.
That is a good point. And I am with you on all of that. So I project them about the same as you. You want to go to Vic next or a new player who might be in the top 100? What do you want to do?
Let's do Oladipo. He's the last Pacer.
Yeah, because he was in it last year.
Yeah, well, he's the last one on the team last year. I was in it last year. I think we'll be on it still.
Yeah, that makes sense. So they lower guys from injury because they're trying to project the whole season. So he's definitely not going to be 20. He's definitely going to be lower than 20.
How low do you think he falls? I don't think he falls at 30, right? I think that's kind of...
Plays 22, he'll fall to. Lowry will jump him probably. Wall, he'll definitely stay ahead of. Hayward will stay ahead of. Ben Simmons probably jumps him. Beal jumps him. Middleton's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Luka
might... Okay, this is kind of the tier I think we can...
Does a guy like Luka jump him, for example?
Who?
Luka come into the top 30?
Yeah, Luka, Siakam, those guys will get up to this range.
Siakam will probably jump him, I guess.
Probably like 30, you know, around Giroux, DeRozan, Kevin
Middleton
Love.
Middleton level.
The worst of the All-Stars, basically.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if he's not in the top 30, but I think like 32 wouldn't surprise me. So maybe if he's not in the top 35.
Like Clint Capella was 35 last year. Like he's better than that, you know?
Yeah.
So he'll probably be 30 to 31.
And I wonder if they shoot Mitchell up this list because of just
his
like...
His USA play might get him up just from that.
Well, just because it makes sense because like Mitchell's usually a guy first year comes on the scene, second year struggles a little bit, third year has his breakout year.
Yeah, he's due for a big year. I'm excited for Donovan Mitchell next year.
Yes.
Reminder that we both liked him in the draft, Adam.
Yes, we did. We both went bench to take him.
Yeah, around Jrue Holiday. So if Jrue was 29 last year, I like around that spot for a pick. But that one's hard. I don't know how much they put in injuries. You said they had Kawhi 10. Did they have a blurb about injuries for him?
So they had Kawhi 12, actually. They had Paul George. Geez. And I believe it was – let's read it. I'll read it myself real quick.
Yeah,
clearly there is a major butt was one of the lines.
Yes.
Finds himself needing to reestablish the quality that is essential to leadership and winning, reliability. So it was a reliability question. I think the thing with Oladipo too is you at least know he's going to probably play 50 games. Is that fair to say? Maybe 45?
45? 45?
Games.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's going to play 45 to 50, right?
Yep, that's what we talked about, yep.
And if he's at his – how many of those games will he be at like – top level Oladipo, 35, 40 of those?
Maybe. I was going to say 30, 25 to 30.
Right. How many is he normally in a year? Probably like 60 of the 75 he plays. So it's about half. So, I mean.
But half of Vic doesn't mean he tumbles exactly twice as far, right? Like
No. But I'm saying that like half of Vic is better than how many players probably.
Right.
I mean, he puts him in. If he's at his best, he's in the top 20, maybe even 15 kind of range. So I think they'll probably have him in the top 30. That's what I would guess.
I think you might be right. I think 30 exactly is the number I'm going.
And I think it'll say something like Oladipo would be higher without injury concerns. If he stays healthy, he's clearly a top 20 player, if not top 15. That's probably like the whole paragraph. That makes sense.
So we're going to do Brogdon next, but I want to ask you a question first. Do you think anyone outside of Brogdon and the guys we've already named will be in it?
I want to lean Warren, Mike, because he had a really good year. But I
think Warren could be player like 100 on the dot.
Yeah, but if you look at all his advanced stats, they're crap.
They are.
I mean, the team was so bad.
He is a whore. I mean, I'm having a piece coming out on him, I think tomorrow, actually. So if you're listening, it's probably out. His defense is horrible. So totally understood why he might end up about 100. But his offense is very good. Like he
didn't even rank in the top 180 for PR last year.
If his shooting is real, Adam, we even emphasize this enough. Of guys who played 1,000 minutes, he had the eighth best 3-point percentage in the league.
Yeah, if that's real, then he
was a great shooter last year. Not a good shooter, a great shooter. If that's kind of like, I don't think he'll be that good, but if that's kind of real, like, that's huge.
I think he won't be in the top 100. I think it's this is the year we have to prove it. I think it's, you know, we have a list of like could be, he'll be on that list.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
I don't think he's a top 100 player. Yeah.
So like last year, the 100 group was like Pau Gasol, Reggie Jackson, Lonzo, but that didn't work out.
Well, it's a lot of rookies too. A lot of guys are like
– It's kind of like useful starters who are
– It's usually has-beens or second-year guys who could make a jump.
Right. Yeah, and he's neither. So you're probably right. He's probably not.
I mean, I see a lot of has-beens on this list. I see a Dirk, a Damari Carroll.
Evan Fournier.
Gasol, Lopez. Lopez not a has-been anymore. But, like,
more.
But then there's like Lonzo and Fred VanVleet.
Here's a guy making a huge jump. They had Vucevic at 90.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what I mean. It's has-beens or guys who make jumps.
So Brogdon time now. I agree with you that I think Warren maybe like 110 if they did a top 110 and Lamb back 125 or something. But I agree. I don't think any of these guys will be in except for Brogdon, who will definitely be in. 50, 40, 90 alone would probably get him close. He also can dribble and defend. I don't know what a great comp is. For example, PJ Tucker was at 85 last year. Iguodala was 87. How do you feel about those?
So here's my problem. Eric Bledsoe, I think, was like, what was he on this list? Let me find it. Bledsoe, I think he was in the top 50, Bledsoe was. But I got
not that high, was he? I thought I just saw his name like 2 seconds ago.
Bledsoe was 53 on this list last year.
Okay.
And I think we both
Bledsoe was better. Really good in the regular season last year and really bad in the playoffs.
I know, but I think, do we think Barnes is a better player than Bledsoe? Bledsoe, sorry.
That's very close.
Right? Now, about Bledsoe probably isn't 53 anymore. He's probably more like, what, 70?
Bledsoe probably goes up a little bit.
You think so? He sucked so bad in the playoffs last year.
His regular season was incredible, though.
I know, but like...
Like, he probably should have made the All-Star team over D'Angelo Russell.
So then do you think Brogdon's like 50 then?
No, I think he's probably closer to like 60.
Okay. That's fair. I mean,
in the 50 to 60 range.
It's hard because right as a... Just as an NBA fan, you always get... kind of shaded by playoff performances.
Yeah. Yeah. And Brogdon was really good in the playoffs, right? That is in his favor.
Well, and also the year, especially when a team makes it deep, it should have been up. Like, you know, if your team stinks, you make the playoffs and you stink, nobody knows. It's like, I mean, the Pacers players, like, I just Turner stunk and so does Sabonis. But we didn't really know because they played four games, they weren't supposed to do anything. But like, if Bledsoe was good, the Bucks could have won the championship. I mean, that was kind of the difference. That's where you remember those guys when like the best, when guys who are supposed to be good are bad in big moments.
Right.
But yeah, you're right.
Another thing with Brogdon, and I don't want to belittle anybody because I did this myself, but like he fits so well that I think we're almost overrating him, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean,
he's going to be very good for the Pacers and his impact is going to be super high, but like if you're ranking him in a top 100 list, I think he might be lower than his impact would reflect for the team.
Yeah. He's more, and also more of a role player than any most of these guys. Like
Joe Ingles' rank makes a lot of sense. He was 56 last year.
Yeah. So I think 60 is a fair. 60 range. Let's put 55 to 65 range.
I can't wait to see. I'm going to type these down so we can see them. But I am looking forward to seeing how stupid we are.
Okay, so other just quick off the top of your head. So, Lamb, what does he have to do to be in the top 100?
What does he have to do to be on there?
Yes.
Play defense, pass.
Okay.
Mostly for him, it's passing. His defense is okay. It's much better than Warren's, but... Yeah, he's kind of inefficient too, so maybe a three ball. I don't know. He's kind of just like a not sucky microwave scorer.
Yeah.
He's a useful player.
So if you had to guess, who makes the top 100 list first, Aaron Holiday or Goga, or just because it's just giggles, TJ Leaf?
Yeah, Holiday just because of opportunity, I think.
Okay.
You know, assuming this question means they're both going to make it at some point, I think.
Well, no, I mean, maybe it's whoever who thinks the first to make it. I guess it doesn't matter to both.
Try still Holiday. I mean,
so you think Holiday makes it next year?
Yeah, I think Goga will be better at their peaks, but no, not next year. I don't think either of them make it next year. Maybe 2 years from now.
Okay, I think I lean towards Goga because I think Goga could have a huge impact this year. I feel like could have some kind of like. If he just comes out and like, remember how Jokic's first year where it's kind of new and they started kind of moving the pieces to go.
And he's like 15 minutes a game. All of a sudden he would do something. You're just like, whoa.
Yeah. And that's what they traded. Well, they traded Kanter that year or no, they traded Nurkic.
No, they traded Nurkic is like second or third year, but yeah.
No, they traded Nurkic. I think it was first year.
No, it was not his first year. I'm very confident it was not his first year.
Let's see. It happened in 2017.
Yes. He was a 2015 rookie.
I don't know if you're right there, Tony.
I promise you Jokic was a 2015 rookie.
Let me look it up. You keep talking.
Jokic was drafted, for those of you about to see what Adam figures out, he was drafted at 41st in 2015.
So he was traded in his second season. Yeah.
Yes. No, his third season.
No, he was traded in February of 2017, which would have been the second
season. Oh, yeah, same year. Okay. Okay. Anywho, yeah, I think Goga does not project to be Jokic. I think like
a guy
for his skill sets like Vucevic, who was awesome last year.
No, I just mean he shows that level of like promise that you have to start moving guys to to make room for him. So I mean,
absolutely.
No, I don't think ever going to be Jokic. He's a different kind.
That'd be
of
awesome.
I mean, yeah, but that's a whole different kind of player. I just mean a guy who just kind of shows some signs of like, this guy needs to play 25 minutes because he's really good.
I can see that. Yeah, I think he's going to be good. I'm having a great time watching Buduknost and Mega Basket from last year. He's good.
And then I guess the only other thought I had is, who do you think is first to crack the top 30, Turner or Sabonis?
Who?
And do either of them do is the other part of it. Do either of them crack the top 30?
Whichever one learns the side of the floor they're bad at first.
I think I lean Turner. I think Turner could be an all-star this year.
If Turner can put the ball on the floor and score, it's him.
If Turner
can defend a little bit, it's him.
If Turner scored 17 points a game, he would be a top 30 player, right?
Yeah, he actually has a good shot at an all-star campaign with a big out. Like, he'll get more shots. So.
Like, I feel like Turner could be a 17-8 guy if he just took an – I mean, we've been saying that forever, right? And he ends up being a 14.
We cannot set these expectations again.
No, but I feel like that's a more likely possibility next year, a 17-8 guy with great defense than it is like Sabonis being like a –
an awesome defender all of a sudden.
Yeah, I'm more supposed to be top 30 to be like a 25-point-a-game guy because his defense is never going to be good. But like, I feel like Turner has a better chance of being good at offense as opposed to being good at defense.
Agree with that.
Because the skills that you can learn as a player versus the other one is not something you just kind of – it's almost like a natural skill you
have. These are always fun. You will see many outrages on Twitter tomorrow if you keep up with the basketball tour world. It's very funny.
That's true. That's true.
And we will talk about it all next week.
I kind of can't wait to see what the they always top 50 first, right? And they do 10 a week, 10 every other.
Yeah, they do 51 through 100.
And then they do like 10 every other day.
So if we're right, if we did right, the only player we'll know tomorrow is Brogdon.
Probably Sabonis too.
We'll see.
We have to go to the
45-ish.
Nah, I said more like 50, I think.
No, we'll find out.
Like if Turner's 48, Aiden's supposed to be 52, that wouldn't surprise me. Let's put it that way.
So speaking of Sabonis and Turner, I know we're overrunning you with FIBA content, and I don't think we're going to talk very much or at all about Turner coming up. But the dream is dead of the matchup, and we'll talk about it for a little bit after this break. So it officially cannot happen. Lithuania was a very upset at the refs, but they lost to France in a nail-biter. And that officially means they cannot get top two in their group. They'll still play in these classification round games. I think it's to determine who finishes like 9 through 16th or something like that, which is really stupid if you ask me. But, Lithuania officially cannot make the quarterfinals. They cannot get top two in their group, which means, Adam, we will not see the Turner-Sabonis game.
Yeah, can I say from the most recent, was it France played Lithuania that I did not realize how many NBA players France has in their team.
Yeah, they're good, man. They're really good.
I mean, they've got between Frank the Tank, Nicolas Batum, Fournier, and Gobert. That's like a solid team.
They're really good. They're one of the four favorites. We discussed them as one of the four teams to highlight and focus on our B-Ball Index pod last week. It was pretty fun. Yeah, it was unfortunate because Lithuania came roaring back from down 11 and took the lead, and then there was some terrible refereeing, and then the refs acknowledged they missed a goaltend call, but they can't do anything about it now. So Lithuania they'll still play games, but they don't mean anything, and they can't play USA. So that is unfortunate.
Yeah. So to end the tournament, Sabonis's final stats per game.
They don't end the tournament. They end the competitive portion of the tournament.
End the competitive portion of the tournament. Sabonis finished with a 48-0-70 stat line in percentages. 10.5 points per game. They find rebounds. I don't think they even have rebounds on this website, actually.
They're very confusing.
I got rebounds in its own tab because offensive. Okay, 6.3 rebounds per game on 10.5 points per game, 3.8 assists per game, and 3 fouls per game.
Oof. So his defense was – let's get a little nitty-gritty here. He played the 4 a lot.
He's going to play a lot of the 4 next year. So
yeah, nice to see him alongside Valanciunas a little bit, even just if to see him play alongside another center. Now, FIBA is very different. A lot of teams play 2 bigs, so it's not like he's necessarily extended far away from the basket. But he actually did substantially better defending away from the rim. I had I only have clips from exhibition games, but I have some clips in my article when I watched him about him defending the pick and roll and doing some stuff away from the basket. But he was defending the ball handler in the pick and roll, excuse me. Very important caveat. And he did a good job. And I think it's nice to see him show those skills because those are really going to be what he needs to be better at this year.
Yeah, and I also think the team he was on was not great for spacing. So which of my three-point shooting, he just...
No team is.
Yeah, well, the USA probably can space, but that's about it.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
And honestly, you look at his stats for somebody like Turner. I know Turner probably is playing less minutes per game. I think Sabonis played something in the 20s, and Turner's playing like at 20. So Sabonis played 23.8. But like he has better stats than Turner per game right now.
Yeah, his shooting actually did not end up as well as you would like.
He took no threes, which, I mean, I guess...
No threes and 48% shooting is not great.
Yeah, I guess with spacing, you assume... Oh, he took one three, sorry. That wasn't going to take a lot of threes, but, like, you would like to just jack some up because, like, why not? But I guess they're actually trying to win. It's not like he's just, like, messing around for fun. I don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll tell you what, he looks good in his profile pic on FIBA.com. So he did win that part of it. He took some very solid photos the entire offseason, I think.
He played well in his exhibitions. You know, I don't want to overhype what those games mean, but like he didn't play bad. Like, I think the stats kind of sell short what he looked like he played. And remember, these games are shorter, so like, of course, their stats are going to look a little bit different than NBA stats. I think you have to keep that in mind. But yeah, you know, I think he showed off some important stuff on defense, and he played alongside a center, which is good for reps, and it was an awesome situation for him. Playing next to Valanciunas, but he did fine.
Well, and he now has 10 days to training camp starts to just kind of rest, come back to America, get used to time or whatnot. I don't know. He'll be
that's nice.
That's good for him. I don't know.
Wait, training camp in 10 days, really?
Isn't it the 18th? Am I wrong?
You might be right.
I feel like it was 18th last year, so I might be off a day or two. Might be the 20th this year.
Sheesh.
It doesn't matter. Yeah. Honestly, it doesn't matter. No, I know it's the end. But it's a few days off.
It does not matter. Something beeping in Adam's house there, guys.
Yes, sorry. That is my dog making a lot of noises and stuff like that, so sorry.
But, yeah, we're not going to talk about USA. Turner's still playing, doing fine. But, yeah, Lithuania's done with competitive games. They played Dominican Republic in what is technically a game that matters, but they'll smoke them, and they'll still finish third in their group. And then, fortunately, that'll be it for them outside of classification rounds, as they're called. So
yeah, so do you think the USA is going to win?
I think USA is going to win. I thought Serbia was awesome, and then they just lost to Spain. So Serbia, Spain, and France are their biggest challengers. So yeah, I think they'll win. I think they're the favorite, but I don't think they're a substantial favorite.
Right, like the four teams are France, US, Spain, and Argentina.
And Serbia. Yeah. Serbia is better than Argentina by a lot.
Oh. Why am I missing what group they're in?
Serbia is in the same group as Spain.
Oh, gotcha.
Spain just beat them.
So how does this work? The top teams from each group make it to the final
top
eight?
Top teams from each group go to the quarterfinals of eight.
Okay.
So it'll be for sure Argentina and Poland, and then for sure Spain and Serbia. I think Serbia plays Argentina and Poland plays Spain. And then for sure USA, and then some one of Czech Republic, Brazil, or Greece. There's actually a lot riding on the USA-Brazil game. And then France and Australia will both go through. But whoever loses between – if USA beats Brazil, they play whoever loses between France and Australia, which will probably be Australia. And Australia beat them in an exhibition this summer. So
ooh.
The quarterfinals onwards is a little tough.
Yes. So when do those start?
The quarterfinals begin. I just had it.
On Wednesday.
Yeah, on Wednesday, I think. Yeah.
All right. So –
No, they start Tuesday, Adam. Come on.
Well, the U.S. would play on Wednesday. Sorry.
Yes, the U.S. would play on Wednesday. Yes, Argentina-Serbia is Tuesday, and then
Spain-Poland is also Tuesday. Spain,
but yeah, so they would play Wednesday, and then Sabonis and Code play then. So, yeah, we'll do more Team USA Turner stuff in the future as he either wins or is eliminated. But fortunately for Sabonis, France had him, and they're the sixth-ranked team, Lithuania, but France had it to be fourth. So. Not really – an upset, just a tough group and a tough loss.
Yeah. I hope that Sabonis got some experience at the four. It'll be valuable going forward. In terms of the USA, excited to see what they can do, I guess. Turner has kind of been a leader on the team, sort of-ish.
Like we've talked about this before. I think there's like clear reasons that you like cannot be negatives about playing for your national team, like getting reps, playing with NBA players in the summer. I think we, and Jared Wade pointed this out to me very astutely in a chat a while ago. Mostly it was dunking on me, but it still made sense. That the opportunity cost of doing this is like they're not training in the USA and being, you know, around team trainers and other actual NBA players like all the time and stuff like that. Yeah, the opportunity cost is bad. So yin and yang, I think it's better to be a part of the team though. And he did well for them. So
yeah, I mean, I guess when you're part of Team USA, you are part of that. When you're not part of Team USA, that's where it gets different.
Yeah, exactly. When you're part of Romania, it's different.
Team USA, you're around 11 other NBA players. You're with NBA coaches. Like, there's just no downside to playing with Team USA because it's basically you're getting coached by the top two coaches in the NBA currently. Like
two of the top, yeah.
I think they're the top coaches in the NBA currently.
I would hear that argument, sure.
I mean, I think you could make a case for Nick Nurse over Brad Stevens, but I think those are probably the top two in the last decade. I mean,
hell of a group.
They're the best coaches of the last decade or last two decades, I guess, going forward now.
Right.
But yeah. So yeah, that's why there's not really a downside to playing for USA. But I see I get the Lithuania argument, but he still got to play against some NBA players. He gets to play in like kind of a big pressure moments, which is always good because he hasn't played a lot of playoff games because they haven't had a lot of playoff games to play in his career. I think he's supposed to play like 15 total. So
yeah. Yeah.
It's good to play in these weird Chinese stadiums too. I think, right? Aren't they like weirdly wide and stuff like
that? They're different. The camera angles look ridiculous.
Yeah. They're like built. Well, cause I think they're built a whole more like a football stadium than like the US ones are, right?
The US one, the Australia stadium was actually horrible. And then the Chinese one is fine. Like it's a basketball stadium, but it's not great.
Yeah. I just think, but like the US, like it's kind of like when they play the NCAA finals in the like Lucas Oil, right? It's like not meant for basketball.
Like below the court. Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah. And you're like, if you're on the court, like it's like such a weird depth perception because everything is going up so high. And it's like, it's basically a cash grab, right? That's why they do it, to put as many fans in the stadium as possible.
Yes. We have drifted too far from.
Yes, we have.
These are hard because I feel bad telling you guys just slightly updated information from week to week. So I don't want to get too into it, but this one was actually a big update because Sabonis and Ko are officially out of the competitive portion. I was really looking forward to potentially them playing each other.
Yeah. And I honestly, the final four, or at least the final eight this year is always pretty fun to watch for people.
Yeah. They're all pretty solid squads this year too.
The only hard part is that that is 12 hours ahead of us or behind whatever it is.
Games start at 3:30 in the morning tomorrow.
But like the highlights are fun to watch. You don't want to stay up that late or figure out how to watch it.
Yeah. Sometimes USA plays at like 8 a.m., which some people can catch. Unfortunately, it's always a
Well, and I know we have an international audience, so some of them might have to catch them on good time.
Yes, of course. They get lucky and actually have time to watch these. They're allowed to rub it in our faces too because the NBA games screw them.
Yes. Most of the time, they're catered to us as Americans and on Eastern Central Time. Exactly.
So it is officially time for us to get going on our get going. Sounds like we're leaving the show. To get started on our player season previews, we need to do it because it's time, and we just scheduled out like every show for the next month and a half. It was crazy, but that meant we have to start them now. So we're doing one today. After this break, we're going to talk about some Aaron Holiday, and it's going to be awesome, and we're going to explain the format of the stuff, so stick around. It's Aaron time, Adam.
I'm excited. He is my I think he'll be the biggest, most improved player on the Pacers from year to year.
That'd be awesome.
From last year.
So just for some clarity here, we're going to do every player who has a guaranteed contract this year, so the 15 roster guys, and then the two-way guys, so Nazem Chulong and Brian Bowen, the second we'll get player season previews. Because all the contracts are guaranteed, I mean, there are Exhibit 10 guys fighting for a roster spot, but like they won't make it. Like they're getting cut. Their contracts aren't guaranteed. So CJ Wilcox, Jakinen Gant, and Amita Brima. They'll be mad ants. We'll cover the mad ants sporadically throughout the year, and you'll hear more about them then. But they will not be covered in one of these formats.
We should also pour one out for the what is $2.25 million or $2.45 million salary number of Monte Ellis.
Of Monte Ellis. I copy my salary sheets to get the rosters in here, and Monte Ellis' name just pops.
So Monte Ellis, the no longer NBA player. I don't know if he's playing somewhere else. Is he playing somewhere else?
No,
he is. He will still haunt the Pacers cap sheet and be on every list for salary for the Pacers until the year 2022.
Years. Okay. So I think for Holiday will have a big role. So he maybe isn't the perfect example. But for the starters, for sure, it'll be easier. We're probably going to do these in a format of like, what are these guys good at? What is the best case and worst case scenario? And what do we expect from them? And I think Aaron is an interesting case for all of that, because his skills are rookie skills and they often are not indicative of what the player can be. So I think it'll be very interesting to see what happens to him this season.
I agree. I'm very excited for him. I was excited when the Pacers drafted him, unlike somebody else on this show. I was excited when he played his first game, unlike somebody else on this show. I've been excited about him. I want him to play more minutes, unlike somebody else on this show.
I do want him to play more now.
Not last year. I have been a Holiday fan since day one, since they made the picks, since I said I wanted to draft him, just letting that people know. I'm excited to see him and his incredible range, his quick shot, and it kind of low-key, decent ability to make nets to plays and pass the ball. Makes him.
Yes. This year, I am looking forward and excited to him playing more and being a part of the rotation. No need for snide remarks on this show, Adam. What are we doing?
Honestly, I didn't mean to start that, but I just kept going. Okay. And it just kind of gets spiraling.
It's kind of funny. Every time he has a good game, one person tweets at me and they're like, oh, you still mad about the Aaron pick? I'm like, God dang it.
I think it's just funny. I mean,
it totally is.
I mean, we both love the Leaf pick, I think. And
I did not love the Leaf pick. Nope.
I don't really even remember.
I have an article saying, no, do not pick Leaf. I have on the record comments of no.
To be honest, that was the first early days of our podcast. I don't remember, but so I'm not, I don't know, but or it's whatever. I mean, you're not going to be right all the time. It's fine.
Well, the Goga pick will go down in history of us just going, what?
Yeah. All right, let's get to the player before we get too diverged.
Yeah, so for Aaron, last year, I think, like you said, he showed some flashes of playmaking, not a ton, only 1.7 assists per game, but he only played 15 minutes, not even, per game. He wasn't really asked too much to create for others. I think what stood out for me with him is that he can create shots for himself pretty well for someone his age and experience level.
Yeah, and I think the number one thing that stood out for me was that he was actually – a better defensive player, what it felt like, than we thought he was going to be from start. He actually can make some defensive plays. I think he got a couple of decent blocks. I think
he was going to be really bad, so I guess that's true. He was better.
That's what I mean.
He's better than really bad.
he showed some qualities where if they were refined correctly, could turn into I don't want to say above average, but an average player. Kind of the way Bojan, right, has always kind of had some signs, but they refined him and kind of made him into a just below average defensive player.
I think he can get player. to a Darren Collison level.
He's got longer arms than Collison. Is that what helped
him? Collison was bad, but not so awful, I guess. Maybe he can be better than that. Maybe he can be
better. I think he can be better than that. I think he has a better body type than Collison. Collison was just small.
He does have quite the wingspan for his size.
Yeah. He made a couple behind-the-back blocks that, I'm like, Darren Collison can never make that play.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a few chase downs. Yeah, that's true. Okay, maybe I'm understanding you a little bit, but –
I mean, he's not going to be an elite level point guard defender. No, he's not going to be Rajon Rondo in his prime.
I think average might be his peak, Hundy.
Yeah, but that's fine. I mean,
That'd be great.
Your point guard position is usually going to be your weakest defensive point, anyways, because it's your smallest player.
Yeah, and if they have Brogdon for a while, Brogdon can guard the one.
Yeah, well, I think the best thing I remember is that when the Warriors were playing the Cavs in the finals years ago, they just ISO'd Steph Curry on everybody because he was the worst defender.
When the 2022 Pacers roll out Aaron Holiday, Oladipo, Brogdon, Kevin Love, Turner. And Brogdon can guard ones, and Holiday can guard the worst player. Things will be great.
Yeah, I'm just saying that when the best team still gets beat by their point guard not being able to play defense, it just the point guard spot is just kind of indication that it's not going to be your best defensive spot.
We're squeezing three segments into one segment here, but we normally with other guys we talk about their role and how their skills can fit into that. I think with Holiday being the backup point guard for him, it's less about adding skills to me and more about him. If he wants to keep that spot and maintain minutes over McConnell, he just has to be more consistent than he was last year.
Yeah. I think it's not taking as many 25-foot threes and trying to figure out how to get to a 23-foot range. Cause I feel like a lot of his threes were he's short of them. I mean, he was just taking his somehow he had a green light to shoot whenever he wanted to, it felt like, which is weird for a guy as young, but that's kind of where he has to figure out how to get a cleaner look at the rim or a cleaner three-point shot where he's not just kind of trying to run around a pretty far out screen. Because I think he's a decent three-point shooter. I really think he could be closer to 40% if he took his shots, put his spots right and found some corner spots at times. I'm wondering if he's good enough at what point they could go him at the point guard, Oladipo's two, and Brogdon at the three.
That'd be awesome. That would be fantastic. I think that trio would be fantastic.
And honestly, Warren at the four in terms of five.
Adam, let me tell you about a consistency stat here, okay?
Okay.
that month that Victor was out before he came back, right? Like November to December when Aaron was playing, he shot between 40 and 60% one time in 12 games. He was either below 40 or above 60 in 11 out of 12.
But look who he's playing with.
Just nuts that he either shot amazing or bad every game.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of that was he had those two really good games at the Jazz.
That's where I think he needs to shore things up is consistency. Like, you can't be going 2-9 against the Hornets in an 18-point loss. Stuff like that.
Yeah, wasn't that Hornets game? Didn't, like, Turner miss that game, too? I mean, a lot of this has to do with, like, at some point with Oladipo and that another player, they were, like, they had nobody. I mean, I think Turner missed that Hornets game.
Hey, you got to make shots, though. 5 for 14 the very next game.
Yeah, but how can you – but if all of a sudden you're being guarded by the best defensive player on the other team at times on the court.
And don't shoot 14 times.
Yeah, I got to get by that.
This is consistency in general. Bojan was between 40 and 60%, like an absurd percentage of his games, which was awesome. You knew what you were getting from him.
Yeah.
No, you do not have that luxury.
No, I guess – I mean, I would say he was positive in all these games, though, in the first five, at least most of these. I guess there's a few
he wasn't. Yeah, sure, playing with a good second unit will help with that, but yeah.
But I'm saying it's not a good second unit when you realize that Turner was out and Oladipo was out. Then it's also not a great second.
Turner was not out on that stretch, was he?
Turner missed a game here in between Charlotte and San Antonio. I think he got hurt in Charlotte and missed San Antonio, if I remember right. That's just off the top of my head.
Yeah, I know someone missed that Spurs game. That does sound familiar.
Which by that point, so that game, Turner did miss because Sabonis started against the Spurs. So he must have got hurt against Charlotte and then missed the next one.
There you go. Big talk.
The fact that I remember that, I can't believe I remembered that, to be honest.
Turner played a lot in that Charlotte game.
Yeah, he must have got hurt. Must have just been hurt for this first game then only.
Anywho, that's what it is for Aaron for me. Like, if he can more consistently be in the, you know, 1/3 to 2/3 shooting percentage range instead of drastically outliers all the time. I mean, you know, it's great when he has these games where he goes 6 of 8 and 7 of 10. Like, that's awesome, and that's a lot of what inspires confidence in what he can be, but stringing those performances together more would be fantastic.
Yeah, part of that one is rookies, being a rookie, and two is not consistent minutes too, right? Where you're constantly being thrown out of the lineup, like, it's hard to develop a rhythm.
Right.
But, yeah, I agree. I mean, I agree. That's how you stay in the NBA, right? You're a consistent player.
And the other thing I want to see more from him personally, you know, we already talked about defense, with that second unit is, and I know the second unit's going to be a little bit inconsistent with who's in it and what they is expected. But at the beginning of the year, when Lamb is in the starting five, I think he will be relied on to create for others. And I want to see him do that a little bit better with passing and you know, running the set play, being ahead of the D and setting someone up, because he didn't do it, but it wasn't something he often did last year.
Yeah. I mean, I think in general, we would like to see him have better point guard skills on both ends of the floor, yes. I guess. More deferring, I guess, the right way, or more setting other guys up. Like, just becoming more of a point guard, realizing that he's not necessarily going to be the focal point of an offense, going to be the focal point. He has to kind of, I guess, be more of a team player is the right way to put it. I guess, I don't know.
Ooh, called out. I know.
I feel like, because Collison was like the ultimate kind of like team player in a way, right? Like, he did, his offensive efficiency was all based on setting everybody else up and being the best like offensive efficient player when he's on the floor, and the numbers all said that. And defensively, it was just kind of making sure other guys were in the right spots to make plays.
Exactly. So like, Kyle O'Quinn averaged more assists per 36 last year, and I love Kyle O'Quinn as a passer, but like, you know getting up to Kyle O'Quinn level playmaking capabilities would be big for Holiday. So that's the level we're talking about here.
Kyle O'Quinn level. I think he can do that. Is that
I think he can too. That sounds like a more hurtful bar than it is, because O'Quinn really is a good passer. But
yeah, I mean, he's one of the better passing big men. And they give him like 18 feet of space when he's at 3-point line. It's not hard to make a pass when there's not a defender between you and the hoop.
He threw McDermott open a lot, but yeah, I see what you're saying.
No, but like, it's like the Jokic thing, right? He like stands wide open at the 3-point line. Like, it's easy to find these little outlet passes. Now that he can shoot,
he's just unguardable though.
Well, but last year, no, they still didn't guard him most of the time. You watch the playoffs, they
lob it in. Yeah,
man. Then it's so easy to find cutters when you can see the entire floor with nobody in your way.
So, do we feel like Aaron's role is locked? Like, how is there a level of bad he could be where he just completely gets exiled for McConnell and maybe even Sumner? But I'm less confident in that.
Yeah, I mean, if he's shooting Lance Stevenson levels bad and doesn't play defense, yeah,
understood.
Lance only played because he had some decent defense at times. I'm not even sure he really did after when he came back.
You know, McConnell's interesting because I get that he's like a locker room guy. He's a good dude. He's a good mentor. But he's like, he's clearly like a winning move signing, you know? So I feel like that makes Holiday's leash shorter. Now, I don't think he'll be that player you just described, but I think he's breathing enough down his neck that it's a thing.
I think it's a kick in the butt to Holiday. It's like, hey, we didn't trade you. We believe in you, but bringing this guy to kind of make sure you stay on your game.
Well, he should. He needs it.
Right. And Holiday should feel confident the team isn't, because they had plenty of opportunity to trade him for guys. I mean, he could have been the centerpiece of Mike Conley trade.
Right. And we knew for sure, like McConnell said, like, they did not promise me a role. Like, I'm pretty confident they know Holiday is going to be their backup.
Yeah. I mean, I'm pretty sure, right? Do we think 2 firsts and Holiday could have got Conley?
Yeah, definitely. That's about what the offer ended up being with matching salary.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, he has to feel confident that they didn't make that move.
It's how the cookie crumbles. They didn't even make it at the deadline last year.
Yeah. So it means they think he'll be something.
They definitely believe in him. Yeah.
They believe his next 8 years will be better cumulatively than Conley's next two.
Yes. Two-ish or whatever that is.
Yeah. I mean, he can sign a stage with them, but he's 2 years left on his contract currently.
Yeah. I'm with you there. So let's get it, Adam. A predicted stat line for Aaron Holiday.
Oh, I forgot we do this.
These are always a disaster, but they're just like fun discussion points, you know?
All right, so I'm going to do something weird. I'm going to try to find similar players to him. You know, they have that little list on B-Ball Ref, but I forget where to find that now.
you just go to the very bottom of his B-Ball Ref page. I'm pretty sure it's where it is.
I don't see it.
I never.
Oh, there it is. Compare Aaron Holiday to other players. There it is.
Yeah, it's a big button. They're never fun. They're always like, oh no, or awesome. It's never an in-between guy.
Actually, I don't see how to get it, to be honest. All right, I'm not
getting. Uh-oh. Adam doesn't know how the internet works.
Come back to bite me after what I said.
Okay, so I think I'll go first.
Yeah,
I think he'll get up to, you know, what do we say, like 18 to 20 minutes for him? If he gets all the backup point guard minutes, 22-ish. I think that, you know, that's 10 more minutes a game plus refined skills. That can get him to about 11 points. He was at 6 last year. 11 points per game. And let's go 3.5 assists, so he gets double the passing. Some of that's playing with a better player. Some of that's self-improvement. Actually, no, let's go 4 assists. 11 points and 4 assists on 46-35-80.
47. Okay.
No, I'm sorry. 43-35-80. I was looking at 2-point percentage, not field goal percentage. I was like, that seems high.
Okay. I think with Holiday.
So basically, he gets better at the 2-point shots, the mid-range chucks that he had a few too many of last year off the dribble, while getting a little bit better from three and passing a bit more.
I'm thinking 8-5, but on like a 44-38 shooting split.
That would be awesome. That would be the passing shooting Holiday.
Yeah, I think he's going to play in some lines with better players. I think he's going to get more. I mean, with Oladipo out, he'll probably have to play more with Brogdon and guys who are just convert their shots.
Adam has the Jeremy Lamb is coming off the bench stats, and I had the Jeremy Lamb is starting stats. Because I think that's going to be an interesting turning point for Holiday season, because Lamb's going to take a lot of the ball from him.
That's true. Because I guess you're assuming once Lamb goes back to the bench, he's going to just be the ball handler almost.
Probably. Or like the most – like when the second unit is Holiday, McDermott, Leaf, and Goga – I mean, and that they'll never have that five, but when it's those five guys, like, Holiday's probably your best late caught creator. Maybe your brother, but
see, I'm wondering if there's something where like they stagger Brogdon and Oladipo, and where Lamb comes into play with Oladipo a lot, maybe or whatnot, and then
and then you
get like this line of like Sabonis, Holiday, Brogdon, where Holiday's kind of maybe the playmaker, but there's a lot of good players around him he can feed the ball to at times.
I guess how he's used has a lot more influence on his stats than I thought, but yeah.
Yeah, well, because he's really gonna be the third or fourth best player on the court most times, right? Or the third or fourth offensive option at times. He's never going to be number one, at least.
Right.
I guess with the bench, he could be two. But like if he's playing, like, let's say he gets a lineup out there with, like, it's him, it's Brogdon, it's McDermott, it's Goga, and, I mean, throwing Justin Holiday, right? that's a lineup where Holiday could like easily get a couple assists a game on. You just feed McDermott in the corner a couple of shots. You maybe go down the post one or two times. Like, there's easily two or three assists there for him.
He's gonna have to, yeah, he's going to have to learn that creation better than he did last year. But I think,
yeah,
I'm confident he'll get a little better at it. Just how much is
going to Yeah, be. And he's just be playing. I think he'll be playing with better players, to be honest, is what it
Absolutely.
Feels.
That helps everybody. That's what we talked about at Team USA.
Yeah, the Pacers are deeper than we were last year. And they won't be as – I mean, obviously they got hurt. It's a whole other problem. But if they're healthy, they're deeper.
That was good. That was a good summation of like a zoom out view of like what is going to happen to Holiday this year.
Yeah, I think I'm excited for him. I think there's an outside chance he just kind of like really pops and then he makes.
I am also excited for his season. I think we'll learn a lot about the future of the team and him from him this year.
Yeah, I mean, there's an outside chance he just. I mean, the problem is there's so many guys in the team who I think could have that year. Like Holiday could have that year where he has like 12 or 13 points per game. Also, Sabonis could go from like 12 to 18. I can see that happening pretty easily. Like, there's somewhere
to awesome.
Yeah, somewhere there's not enough points for all these guys, unless they're going to score 120 per game, which they're not. They're going to score probably what they score 105 last year or something like that. It's probably going to be again. They've been very consistent about how many points they score per game. Let's right. see. Last year, they scored 108 per game. Year before, 106. 105 the year before that. Like, they're just like, – they're probably
going to – Four-paced team is not going to change.
Yeah, I mean, they're going to score somewhere between 105 and 108 points per game, which they've done under McMillan the last 3 years. So at some point, if with Oladipo back and he's putting up, say, 20 per game, there's not enough points out there for everybody to get their stuff. But somebody will, I think, will improve. We'll see somebody on this roster make a jump somewhere into something.
I agree. I'm with
very
you.
Very vague there. It's a very vague.
Very vague ending to leave the people on. Do we have time for, like, a football 40 seconds?
Yeah, I can do mine real quick.
Yeah, talk about Vinatieri for me, man.
Yeah, he blew the game on Brissett's moment. This is going to – if Vinatieri had missed those kicks, Brissett would have led a game-winning drive for the Colts. If they won that coin toss, they probably would have won that game. Marlon Mack is clearly really good. The O-line is still really good. The team's going to probably have a good year. Remember, the Chargers were a top 18 under the Colts. Losing to them on the road in the home opener is nothing to be ashamed of, especially in an overtime game. Like, Chargers are a good team, so it's not like they lost to, like, Miami on week one. That would have been really sad.
My takeaway of watching zero snaps is that NFL overtime rules are junk.
Yeah, I tend to agree, but they always, you know, they had won because they got the coin toss first. It's a whole different thing, right? I mean, it's just, it's a weird sport, to be honest, when it's overtime. It's not really a sport meant for that because you don't want to keep hitting each other to the death, right? Like in the NBA, you can just keep playing because nobody really gets hurt.
Right.
When you play that many minutes, it's just exhaustion at some point. So, right. I don't know. Usually the first month, this season doesn't actually matter at the end of the day. The Colts went like 1-3 last year. In the first month, they made the playoffs. Most teams don't get good till like October, November because nobody practices anymore anyway. So. I don't know. They showed some signs. We'll see how the team develops. They got a lot of rookies out there playing. So,
yeah, Vikings defense was phenomenal. So that's
Dalvin Cook. Dalvin Cook looked healthy. I watched just like a little bit of it, but his knee looked good out there.
Yeah, baby.
I should have taken him in fantasy. Is all. My only thought. I took David Johnson. I'm actually taking Dalvin Cook. To be honest.
Well, if we're gonna do a fantasy second, I had Sammy Watkins on the bench. So.
Oh, that one hurts. Makes you feel any better. I started Baker and he threw three picks and it's garbage.
Yeah, not a good. I only see the score. I have no idea what happened to the game, but not a good look for the very fun and awesome Browns that everybody was talking
about. But like I said, the first month doesn't – teams don't practice anymore, so the first month doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I just don't know.
I mean, their year of the past, you should go 2-2 the first month and they end up winning the Super Bowl every other year. So I don't know.
I'm going to have some random person who likes baseball, so we can do like a baseball 5 minutes.
I mean, for me, I told Marina this, my girlfriend. I was like, come week 9, I bet the Browns are 7-2 and the Titans are 2-7. I mean, that's just what, like, that's how the NFL works. Like, you're not usually good the first couple weeks, and then you figure it out, and the good teams really show themselves in November, December time.
It is what it is. We'll carry this on next week. So we actually have scheduled, so I can do admin for like 2 seconds really quick. We are going to do one a week through the 22nd will be the last week. Like the show will come out September 23rd. That'll be the last week of one episode a week. And then we're up to 3 through the preseason and 5 up to the week before the season. So we're only 2 more weeks of the doldrums of the offseason before we really get going. It's going to be awesome, awesome stuff. So only 2 more weeks of the football 5 minutes. I promise that we will not pull in Antonio Brown and we will always be on the show for you as we continue through. As you, always, you can follow the show on Twitter at Locked On Pacers. Adam is at Freedman Adam 5. Adam, you got anything you want people to check out?
I just think that was the best joke you've ever made.
Thank you.
That's a great reference. Okay,
I think my Twitter joke about Antonio Blankney getting released at the same time was very funny. I was like, wow, I can't.
I did not catch that one, to be honest. I went kayaking this weekend on that Saturday morning, and I actually didn't realize Antonio Brown got traded until like 3 hours after it happened.
What a wild day. And I'm on Twitter at TEastNBA. Thank you guys so much for listening. And we, of course, will see you next week.